Good afternoon. I now call to order the public hearing on the Land Use Planning Commission's on Rolling Tide Towers LLC's application for development permit DP 5050. Rising Tide's proposal is for a new telecommunications facility and tower in a community residential development subdistrict, a DRS2 in Dallas Plantation, Maine. The purpose of the hearing is to receive evidence from the applicant, interveners, and members of the public regarding the application. This hearing is being conducted in accordance with Maine Administrative Procedure Act and the Commission's Chapter 5 governing public hearings. My name is Everett Worcester, and I'm Commission Chair and presiding officer in this hearing. The commissioners and staff will now introduce themselves. Bill?
Bill Gilmore, Freeman Township, Franklin County.
Robert Everett, Oxford County.
James May from Mapleton.
Peter Prey, Penobscot County.
Samantha Horn, Staff Director.
Lauren Parker, Assistant Attorney General and Counsel to the Commission.
Betsy Fitzgerald, Washington County.
Millard Billings, Hancock County.
Gwen Hilton, Somerset County.
Derwood Humphrey Benedict, Aroostook County.
This hearing is being recorded. All witnesses at this hearing will be sworn, and any exhibits presented during testimony must be entered into the record. At this time, I ask all persons planning to testify today to please stand and raise their right hand. Do you affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth? Thank you. You may be seated. This hearing will commence with an opening statement and testimony from the applicant, followed by an opening statement and testimony from the interveners. The interveners and applicant may then cross-examine each other if they choose to do so. The commission and staff may ask questions of any party at any time. Once this portion of the hearing concludes, I will call for the public who have signed up to testify. If you have not already, please sign up on the sheet by the entrance door. When you are called to approach the microphone, please clearly state your name and whether you are from an affiliation you are here to represent. At this time, the commission staff will provide a brief overview of the project.
Thanks. My name is Bill Hinkle. I'm Land Use Planning Commission staff. Provide an overview and review of the criteria that are in play here for this project. So Rising Tides Towers proposed telecommunications tower is located in Dallas Plantation in Franklin County. The proposed project would be located in a community residential development or DRS2 subdistrict. The proposal includes the clearing of approximately 10,250 square feet of vegetation in a forested area on the lot, the construction of a 190-foot-tall lattice telecommunications tower, an outdoor modular equipment platform, and a 75-foot chain-link fence. The proposed location is on a 114-acre lot off the Dallas Hill Road. The lessor is Mark Beauregard, and the lease area is forested and adjacent to a shale pit owned by Mark, shown here in this picture. This is the shale pit, roughly, and the general location of the proposed tower. The purpose of the DRS2 subdistrict is to designate residential areas that can accommodate an appropriate range of low-impact commercial and public uses that are compatible with residential uses. The subdistrict seeks to promote residential living in thriving neighborhoods with a limited range of services. The proposed telecommunications tower facility, is a utility facility as defined by Chapter 10. Utility facilities compatible with residential uses may be allowed within DRS2 subdistricts upon issuance of a permit from the Commission, subject to land use standards. The Commission has not previously issued a permit for a telecommunications tower in a DRS2 or other residential subdistrict. The DRS2 sub-district is located east. This is this pink shaded area is the DRS2 sub-district located east of Rangeley Lake and west of Saddleback Pond. The area immediately outside of the DRS2 sub-district is MGN, General Management. So the commission may not approve an application unless all general criteria for permit approval are met. That's in accordance with Chapter 10, Section 10.24. Of these, Chapter 10, Section 1024C requires that adequate provision has been made for fitting the proposal harmoniously into the existing natural environment in order to ensure there will be no undue adverse effect on existing uses, scenic character, and natural and historic resources in the area likely to be affected by the proposal. A key component to evaluating whether the utility facility is compatible with residential uses within the DRS2 subdistrict is natural character. Section 10.25E of our rules address these standards, with one being that the design of the proposed development shall take into account the scenic character of the surrounding area. Structures shall be located, designed, and landscaped to reasonably minimize their visual impact on the surrounding area, particularly when viewed from existing roadways or shorelines. Another section of this rule states that, to the extent practical, proposed structures and other visually intrusive development shall be placed in locations least likely to block or interrupt scenic views as seen from traveled ways, water bodies, or public property. The applicant prepared a visual impact assessment, which identifies that the proposed telecommunications tower would be visible from the following areas and public resources: Haley Pond and Haley Pond Park, Gull Pond, Route 416, which is a scenic byway west of Rangeley Village, Stratton Road, also Route 16, and Oaks Perry Cemetery on the Dallas Hill Road, and Dallas Plantation Town Hall, also on the Dallas Hill Road. The purpose of the hearing is to receive testimony and evidence from the applicant, interveners, and the public regarding the relevant approval criteria and land use standards. The presiding officer granted intervener status to Mark Beauregard and the Maine Appalachian Trail Club. The applicant is represented by their agent, Black Diamond Consultants, and public comments may be submitted to my attention while the record remains open. My contact information is on this slide, so if you intend to submit comments, might be good to jot this down, or you can see me after the hearing closes. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. At this time, I would ask the applicant to provide its project overview and testimony.
Good evening. My name is Jim Hebert. I'm with Black Diamond Consultants, and Todd Smith here, who is with Todd Rich, who's with Rising Tide Towers. And we're here to provide you with additional information on the proposal for a telecommunications facility in Dallas Plantation. And to give you some additional information, I've specifically tried to address questions that I saw coming through emails about concerns or points of interest they had about the proposed facility. So I'm trying in this presentation to address those. With that, we'll start with the presentation first is the opening statement. In the opening statement, we'll talk a little bit about the application itself, not in any great detail. I want to present to you the FCC registered towers in the area and how this fits into the area, this proposed tower. What the proposed tower will provide as far as area coverage. A little bit about the FirstNet system, which will be one of the occupiers on the tower. And the enhancements to personal safety as a result of the communications. So with that, let's go to the first slide, please. Okay, and I think Bill's already mentioned the fact that this is an application that was submitted to LURC. The property itself is about 115 acres, owned by Mark Beauregard. The property lines are somewhere like this and here, and the total property is 115 acres. And out of that, we, Rising Towers has leased a 200 by 200 foot, very small area from Mark for this facility. The facility to be developed itself is about 100 and, by 100 feet. So these are very small areas, all of these facilities are. And I'll be speaking on that a little bit more in the presentation. The application was submitted to LURC, to LUPC, on December 18th. It included engineering drawings, all the engineering drawings, of which I will be presenting a few of these of special interest to you. And the application completed all the required assessments that are required by the Land Use Commission. And the reports included historic preservation, wildlife and rare species, site soil surveys, the NEPA environmental screening, visual impact assessments, and a few others. And all the assessments support the proposed construction and operation of the proposed facility. And as you can see, this is the location of the tower, and it's within a pretty well wooded area. So the facility itself below the tree lines will be well screened from the neighborhoods. All right, this is the first page of the FCC registration search. And as you can see, we looked at an area within the tower of about 5 miles in radius. And we asked for any information on registered towers of any height. In the second page, the next page shows the results of that search, which is in the FCC database. And it identifies four completed towers. This one is now completed. So four completed towers in the Rangeley area. 49 feet was one of the towers, 30 feet, second, 100 feet, and 72 feet. And the reason that's important is what I'm going to present here in a little bit. So those are the four. These are the four towers, plus a fifth one that's been granted in the Rangeley area. None of them in the Dallas Plantation area. So the next one. So the next slides are going to show what the RF, what the computer study shows as RF coverage for the Dallas area. What it is now without the tower, and what it's proposed to be, or what it will be. Once the tower is in operation. So the next slide, please. Now this is the Dallas plantation area. This is Rangeley. And the dark green indicates that there is no RF coverage in these areas at this time. The next slide. This is with the tower in operation. And it shows that the areas that are now light green, yellow, red, and into blue will now receive RF transmission coverage where it didn't prior to the operation of the tower. And the next slide is just another exposure of that display. And that's the location of the tower. This is the Dallas plantation area. The Rangeley area, you can see that this tower will provide much improved RF coverage to this whole area. Next slide. This one is a, people have asked why that particular location was selected. This is a search ring, what we call a search ring. And it was provided by the ATT people as well as FirstNet through Rising Tide to Black Diamond. And it basically says, you know, we would like for you to locate a tower somewhere within this search ring. That location provides good network connection with proposed additional towers in that particular area. And by network, I'm talking about if you're driving along a highway and you are in connection with an RF tower, if you tend to go beyond the range of that tower, the next tower picks up, so you're not losing any calls and you're able to continue your communication or data transmission. So this is the ring that was provided to us, and this is the location that we found in Dallas, Mark Beauregard's property. And as you can see, it's pretty much in the center of that search ring. And the location within the search ring, again, is very important for what ATT is trying to achieve through a network system, tower network system. Okay, and I think, what do we got next? Okay, so in addition to that, FirstNet, if you're not familiar with FirstNet, is a new national system. They're looking to achieve 99% population coverage within the United States in the FirstNet system. And the FirstNet system is basically a first responder communication system that would be a national system. So it has been, these locations have been reviewed and approved by states, and ATT is the primary contract to the states to provide this national system. And so this particular search ring, that particular location, fits into their scheme, network scheme, for FirstNet transmission in the state of Maine here in this particular area that we're interested in at this point. Okay, and I think that's the last slide, right? So now if we could go to the project overview. Project overview, so what I've discussed so far is a little bit about why the application, why the location, what the interest is. The project overview is more to bring you, make you a little more familiar with the actual facility, its layout, and some people have expressed interest in the structural integrity of the towers. So I'll speak a little on that. Visual impact assessment is a very important item that's been discussed a number of times, and so I've got a few sections from the report itself to present to you. And the others are information on the engineering drawings that are part of the application. So the first one is, if you could go to that next slide. All right, this is the location of the tower, and there's been some concerns or concerns about a tower falling and how is it going to affect my property. The closest property is here. And how is a falling tower going to affect my property? And it's hard to see here, but the distance between the center of the tower to this open area is 350 feet. The tower itself is 190 feet tall. So if the tower were to fail, and I'm going to talk a little about the structural integrity of the tower a little later here, but if the tower were to fail completely, it would fall within a 190-foot circle of the point of collapse. And so this property here would not be impacted by a falling tower. I thought that was important information for all of you to see. So if you could go to the next slide, please. Oh, okay, it's going to be a little difficult. Okay, if you can, I've got a more clearer drawing here, so I'll try to point a few things out to you. This is an existing access road. It's about 280 feet from the Dallas Hill Road. And we will extend this road another 200 feet to the site itself. The site is showing on the outer boundaries here, the 200 by 200. Within that is the 100 by 100, which I previously stated is the site that's actually going to be developed. The rest of this is not going to be impacted, but it's an area that we were required to lease from the LURC requirements. And within that 100 by 100 is a fenced-in area, and that's where all the equipment and the tower will be located. So again, it's a very small piece of parcel within a pretty large property, and also within a wooded area. Next slide. Hopefully that one came out better. Yeah, that's still a similar drawing, but now it shows our parking area, which is 20 by 75 feet, and the extension of our road, which would be about 12 feet by 200 feet. And if you were to take all of this impervious, this developed impervious area, you're talking about a tenth of an acre of land that will be converted from pervious land to impervious land. And the reason I limit it to that is because this area here, the 100 by 100 that will be developed, is actually, once the trees are removed and the land is landscaped to the surfaces we need, geotextile is installed on that raw land surface, and then we apply about 6 inches of crushed rock. So in essence, that is continues to be a impervious area, but if you were to include that as impervious areas, now you're talking about a third of an acre of impervious area within 115 acres of wooded area. So there would be very minimal impact from stormwater from this developed area. And the next slide. That's too bad. So here's the tower. And this is a leased area by Wireless Partners within the fenced-in area. And you can't see it here, but there are five additional areas here that are preserved for future development. And you'll see it in the tower elevation drawing. These are, should we get additional carriers on the tower. The tower has been designed for six carriers. The application is for the first carrier, which is FirstNet, along with the Wireless Partners. But the tower itself is designed for five additional carriers. And so the 100 by 100 area includes five additional areas to mount the future carriers' equipment, as well as the tower itself. All right, this is one of the pages, I think it's a summary report, or it's the first page of the visual assessment. Visual assessment was provided to us by Julie. She is a licensed person in the state of Maine, and she follows the LUPC guidelines for visual impact assessments when she performs her assessments. And I've highlighted the areas that are, this is RT13 report, visual impact assessment. And it says the consultant determined the presence of, and she lists the areas that were within that 5 mile radius area that she looked at. And her conclusion, this is a 38 page report, so I'm just showing you the first page on it. She says, and I better read it from here. This study has confirmed that the proposed telecommunications tower will be visible within a 5 mile radius of the proposed telecommunications structure. However, the views of the tower are limited and intermittent, with no diminishing of the integrity of the existing viewscapes. The tower will have no adverse visual impact to any significant visual resource. And I know, the next slide, I know that the Appalachian people have expressed, I'd say concern, I guess, on how the tower might impact the Appalachian Trail, view towards that area. And so what I want to show you here is this is the Appalachian Trail. There's a dotted line. It comes close to this 5-mile radius from the tower. There's your tower, 5-mile radius, and the Appalachian Trail comes close to it. And so the question is, you know, what will be the impact of people on the Appalachian Trail, their view of the tower, which is located about 5 miles away. So the next slide gives you some indication of what they might see. And I'll ask you to go back in a minute. So this is a couple of views, not to what I just showed you, but views to the balloon test. Now, the balloon test, for those of you who aren't familiar, there's it's a 5-foot balloon that is lofted approximately at the location of where the proposed tower is going, and is lofted to a height of 190 feet, which is the height of the tower. And so when they do the visual impact assessment, the balloon is lofted, and she goes to all of these scenic view areas and looks for how the view might be impacted by the visibility of the balloon, which would be the top of the tower. And so in this particular case, and I'll show you where she was taking this picture from, but she is viewing the tower at a distance of about 5 miles. The balloon is lofted, and she says in the statements here, on the photograph 17, Ranger Lake boat launch, although views across open water, so no woods, no topography to interfere, although views across the open water look at the tower site and Saddleback Mountain beyond, the balloon was not visible to the naked eye due to the distance, and that was 5.4 miles. In the next photograph, 18, Ranger Lake Swim Beach, although views across open water looked at the tower site and Saddleback Mountain beyond, the balloon was not visible to the naked eye due to the distance, 5.4 miles. So if you could go back to the previous slide. So the photographs that I just showed you, which were photographs 17 and 18, they're right here. So she was located in these two locations, looking at the tower, and the view that you just saw in those photographs is that view of how looking for the balloon from this distance, what you would be able to see. And as she said, it wasn't visible because of the distance. The reason that's kind of important is because this distance is the same. It's about five miles, maybe a little bit more. So even though she didn't go on the Appalachian Trail and look for the balloon itself, the distances, because of the distance and the size of the tower or the size of the balloon, would make that view pretty negligent. Okay, so if we could go two slides down. All right, so if I could talk to you a minute about the lattice tower design. First of all, it's a self-supported design, meaning you don't use use guy wires or anything like that. The tower itself is self-supported. It's made of structural steel members. If you could go to the next slide. And view. Okay, so here's a display of the tower, 190-foot tower, self-supported lattice tower. And there's a top view of the tower, which would be this location here with the antennas. And it's and that's where the FirstNet system will go. Wireless partners and FirstNet will go at this location, was about 186 feet. These towers are designed to nationally accepted standards. As the standard that we use in the United States is TIA 222, and it happens to be Rev G. And that's a standard that is used for structural towers and antenna support systems. And as I say, it's nationally recognized as the acceptable design for these types of towers. Go back to the tower, please. And I think what's of interest here is when we design these towers, we're designing them for how they will be if fully loaded. So this tower has been or will be designed. This is a typical tower is what I'm showing you. We haven't designed our tower yet because what's required is that we do a geotechnical study of the soil at the tower site. And then from that, we design the support system of the tower. And these are expensive items, and we don't really usually perform those until after we have approval to move forward. If we get approval, we will basically do a geotechnical study, find out what the soil survey gives us for information, and that will be provided to the tower designers. They will design a foundation for the tower, and the tower itself will be very similar to this. The foundation might be somewhat different depending on the soil study. But these towers are designed as fully loaded. So even though we're showing one carrier, when they design the tower, when they do a structural analysis on the tower, they are including the loading of all of these five additional carriers and all the support equipment associated with that. And so with one carrier, I mean, people have expressed concern, you know, how strong are these towers? Well, these towers, as fully loaded, are designed for 90-mile-an-hour winds in this particular location at Dallas Plantation, 90-mile-an-hour winds with no ice load, or 40-mile-an-hour winds with a three-quarter-inch ice load on the tower itself. Plus, it includes the loading of all these carriers, which are non-existent at Dallas and probably never will be. You may get one or two additional carriers, but because this is such a remote site, I don't expect that you would ever see five additional carriers on the tower. So there's quite a safety factor in the design of these towers, or will be at the Dallas site, especially because it won't be fully loaded and it's designed to be fully loaded. And I thought that was kind of important that you get that information. Because one of you had expressed interest or concern about the structural integrity of the tower. As I said, these towers are designed for some pretty extreme wind loads for that area, but that's what comes out of the standard. And if the tower were to fail, let's say we had a hurricane or a tornado that's beyond design basis, these towers are made of ductile steel. So if they were to fail, more than likely they would basically bend and fall on themselves instead of like a tree, which is very brittle and falls pretty much at the root. And the last slide, was that it? We've already covered visual impact. So that's it for the presentation, and we're available here. Did you want to say a few more on FirstNet? Are you all set?
Yeah, just so that the committee knows, FirstNet is a project that's going throughout the state and throughout the country, and this tower and the height and the design is specifically designed to connect the towers to the northeast, south, and west of this. So although we're developing a site here in Dallas, we're also developing sites in and around Dallas that is also going to be used. Some of them are going to be submitted to you folks as the state planning board. Some of them will be local planning boards. But along with Rising Tide and Wireless Partners, AT&T and AT&T's vendors are also building and designing these towers at the same height in the same design so that it would be contiguous and so that it would be state-of-the-art. So this location is really important so that the existing structure, so in the case of the structure on Saddleback Mountain that's existing today, this structure will talk to that structure as well, and then the structures that we're building off to the west. And it's important to know that FirstNet is a the design was selected by the state and approved by the state through AT&T as their selective vendor. So we're just really trying hard to be within those guidelines. That's all I have.
Anyone have any questions? Bill?
Just one. I did see the visuals that you showed us with regards to the 2 mile radius and what that tower looked like or what the ball looked like at that 2 mile radius.
Okay.
I didn't see a photo of what it might look like at, say, 500 feet.
At 500 feet, I don't think you'd lose much visibility to it. But yeah, the closer you...
A 1,000 words.
Say what?
A picture's worth 1,000 words.
Yeah, she went to what would be considered scenic points of view, and maybe there wasn't anything there at 500 feet. Yep.
Yes, go ahead.
With respect to the additional towers, are we to make sure I understood what you said? So we're just talking about one tower in this particular location, but it provides for 8 carriers, correct?
5 additional carriers.
For 5 additional, I'm sorry, 6 altogether.
But we're only talking about the first carrier at this point.
Right, okay. So, and then when you talk about additional towers, how close might they be or in the area? You're talking about the ones that are going to be within this system
right. That
will provide full coverage.
Towers, because of their wattage level and frequency that they use, it depends on foliage and topography, but on the average it's about 5 mile radius coverage. Could go up to 7 if you've got more open country, but it's about 5 miles. So you're talking a tower every 5 miles.
Yeah.
Every 10 miles.
Okay. See them.
And you can count every single carrier. Verizon and AT&T and Sprint and T-Mobile and the next tower, you can see that.
So what is generally the life of a tower? How long is it going to last?
These towers are designed for 40 years.
40 years. And how long do you think the technology is going to be around?
No idea.
We don't know.
It's growing, though.
Right.
If anything, it's growing. There'll be more demand for towers. The equipment may get smaller. The transmission may be shorter even because of the high demands on broadband and things like that. The higher you go in frequency, the shorter the propagation.
Okay. And I'm trying to remember. Wasn't it just this winter that there was a tower failure? Was it on top of Sugarloaf? Do you remember that? Am I right? And we saw pictures of what it looked like, and I think it was just sort of bent over and down. So that's kind of what might happen if it was exposed.
Yes. Although I haven't seen too much on failures for self-supported lattice towers. Guy towers tend to have a higher failure rate because if you lose a guy tower, you've lost the tower in essence.
And that was a guy tower?
I'm not sure, but I haven't seen many failures for self-supporting lattice towers, unless you exceeded the design. You know, if you had a tornado or a hurricane, that actually exceeded conditions.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Hello.
If the tower should fail, where would it? Would it fall outside of that 100-foot fenced-in area? In your opinion, if it bent, would it bend outside of that 100-foot?
The tower, the site is 100, the fenced-in area is 75 by 75. The tower is 100, depends on the point of failure. If it's the top, then it would stay within that area. But if it was for some reason at the bottom that it failed, usually the heavily loaded areas are more at the top of the tower.
So
if it was at the lower section, yeah, it would fall outside that fenced-in area.
So it is possible for it to fall outside of that fenced-in area.
Because it's higher than the fenced-in area.
Right.
The coverage area, yeah. But it would fall within the lease area, though. Lease area is 200 by 200.
So what's the liability if it falls outside of the fenced area and somebody happens to be there?
Well, if the tower were to fail and somebody's there, it's probably because of an out-of-design condition, and that somebody probably shouldn't. He's got other problems than the tower, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, let's look at Murphy's Law. I mean, it could happen.
That's why it's good that it's in a wooded area. But it would have to be loaded beyond design, and you're not talking Murphy's Law here. You're talking.
But it
this
could
is how
fall,
it's designed.
It could potentially fall off the least 200 foot by 200 foot if it's 190 feet.
Yes, yes, it could.
So if the wind picked it up.
Yeah. So right now, we're within 200 feet of the lease area, right? 100 foot, if it falls to the side, we're within 200 feet. But the design of the tower is such that it's going to buckle on itself. So to your point, the Sugarloaf Tower, which is 35, 40 years old and way beyond its the Rev G standards that we're building this is way beyond the standards of that structure. And that structure fell as it was designed to do and bend over and buckle on a ski mountain with hundreds of people. And this is in the woods with no people. We feel pretty good about the design. And we really don't feel that this is going to fall over.
Is all the land around the leased lot open to the public?
No, this is the we're on the landowner has we're on the land where he would prefer us to be, and it's his land all around. Yeah, he has 115 acres.
And it's posted. It's not open to the public.
He's got a gate.
Gated.
Correct.
So the house that's next door. The closest property, if it's two next to that, which is 300 and some odd feet away, those people can't access that 115 acres.
I've never gone to their backyard. I don't know what it looks like. I'm certainly sure that they could trespass should they decide to. Absolutely, yeah.
Please, no comment from the audience. You'll have your opportunity to speak if you signed up. Thank you.
Yeah, I would just say nothing is fail-safe, you know, no matter what you design, if you take Murphy's Law, yeah, but nothing is fail-safe. But I did try to impress on you that this is a well-designed tower. It's not designed to fail. It's designed to survive high winds. And if it were to fail, it's because you're outside of design. So you've got something over 90-mile-an-hour winds and conditions that people would not be around a tower, I don't think, under those conditions, not intentionally anyway. That's my own opinion.
Any other comments? Thank you. We're going to move on to the interveners. And my paperwork says Mark Beauregard is going to speak first. Who would you get in front of? Thank you.
I signed up as an intervener, as a landowner, just to hold my closer.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. I signed up as an intervener. I'm the landowner. I don't have a prepared statement. I just wanted to hold my spot in case I needed to correct any part of the record that I knew as a landowner. But seeing as I'm sitting here, I would just like to point out the history and of the land use and the zoning of this particular lot. That lot pre-lurked belonged to Hudson Pulp and Paper Company. Georgia Pacific acquired those lands that they had in the Rangeley area. Georgia Pacific started to liquidate their land holdings. Saddleback Ski Area was leasing the ski area from them, and they ended up purchasing 16,000 acres from Georgia Pacific Corporation on the mountain where the Appalachian Trail was and all the land around Saddleback Lake. And there were these three outlots ranging in size from 212 acres as the largest to this one here, which, you know, is 100 and some. And they were all general management at that time and had only been used for wood harvesting and that trail pit. But when they did the Rangeley plan, Lurk did the Rangeley plan in 2000, Saddleback had big plans of developing the ski area, which have since fizzled, and they asked if that could be included in the DRS, thinking they may need it for workforce housing. And that never materialized, and before the present owner that has Saddleback now, the Don Breen, he had this land held under a company called Franklin Timberlands, Inc. He decided to sell those three outlots. I purchased them. And even though it was DRS, I didn't sell any lots off of it or anything. You know, it's not like people developed it as residential land, and now a cell tower is going in amongst it on that property. It's still, and it would suit me just as well if it was still general management, because I use the shale pit and harvest timber, and that's about all I do with it. So the zoning changed in 2000, but the land use didn't really change. I just point that out.
Any commissioner have any questions? Thank you.
Okay.
Second intervener is the Maine Appalachian Trail Club.
Thank you, Mr. Worcester. My name is Tony Barrett. I'm with the Maine Appalachian Trail Club. And Jim, I'm one of those Appalachian Trail people they refer to, and I don't think we've had a chance to meet, but I'll say. I think most of you are familiar with the club, but just as a reminder, yeah, I'll put it closer. Is that you, Mary? Yeah, okay. I think most of you are familiar, but just as a reminder, we're a small volunteer group, one of the 31 maintaining clubs that works to maintain the Appalachian Trail with under the umbrella of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy under a cooperative management agreement from the National Park Service. So we're responsible for the construction and maintenance of the trail for the 267 miles here in Maine. And as part of our responsibilities, we also are looking out for developments that may impact the primarily the integrity of the trail and its current use. And we're currently working on two other projects. To give you familiar, it's a communications tower in Caratunk where we're working with the developer, working with him on providing construction access road to his site. And also, I think you know from previous hearings, we've been working closely with CMP on the corridor project to mitigate and offset some of the impacts that crossing is going to have to the trail, too. In this case, I too, maybe like Mr. Beauregard, we became an intervener just really to get access to information because we had a hard time evaluating this project initially. So thanks to Bill and Sarah for providing information for us to do that. And it's more of a question that I guess I'd like to pose maybe to staff that, and I don't think it's really one for the developer. And it was the visual impact assessment that was done by the developer and the 5-mile circle that was drawn around it. And I think, Sarah, you actually initiated a conversation with the consultant who did that work and asked what about the impact on the Appalachian Trail because it was outside the 5 mile. And her response was, well, it's outside the 5 miles, so it doesn't really matter, basically. And she used as an example Quill Hill and a photograph from Quill Hill, which was 7 miles from the site. And I mean, Quill Hill is a nice viewpoint, but it's not a resource of state and national significance. It's not a national scenic trail, and it's not an eligible property for the National Register either. And it seemed almost like an artificial construct that this five-mile limit was set, that the impacts to the Appalachian Trail were not evaluated. Saddleback is a premier viewpoint on the Appalachian Trail. It's over 3 miles of exposed ridge, and it's a destination for walkers and day and long distance hikers. So I don't know how I should address this, but maybe it's to the commissioner or the staff. Is there a set 5 mile limit that you pose for the evaluation of communication towers, or what's the basis for that 5 mile?
Does anyone know the answer to that? Yeah, answer.
Hi, Tony. We have over the years developed some guidelines. It's not rule. It's just internal guidelines we use about how to ask for visual assessments when an application is coming in the door. There's no hard limit that says that one can't look beyond any specific set distance. For unlighted towers, depending on their height, usually we're looking anywhere from like a mile for a Met tower that's small and unlighted out mm-hmm. to up to 5 miles for a tower that is even small lighted towers, but something that's under 199 feet, so it's going to not be lighted. Usually the farthest we look is five. Just our experience tells us that often three is about where it starts to become a little harder to pick up visually, but that's not universally true, and it really depends on the design of the tower and on the sensitivity of the resource from where the view is being considered. And on occasion, if there's something that's particularly visible and that something outside of 5 miles is particularly significant, we certainly can look at that. So there's no hard limits. It's just guidelines to get an applicant headed in the right direction when they're submitting their visual impact assessment. And then if further information is needed, okay. It's possible to ask for
it. And I've heard this rule of thumb from developers, and it just seemed like it was used as, the Appalachian Trail was mentioned visual impact assessment, but it wasn't really evaluated. It was really an opinion. As Jim mentioned, they didn't go onto the site. They didn't do any reverse ray analysis, viewshed analysis from that site. And I'll just tell you a little anecdote of my own up on from that viewpoint. I was there early on a Sunday morning, and a man came who I later learned was a pharmacist in Bangor. He had got up early in the morning, drove to the base of the ski area, walked up the lift trails, and we were kind of enjoying the view, and he picked up and his eyes were drawn to, and he said, "What is that on the horizon?" And what his eyes were drawn to was the Kibbe wind farms, which were 16 to 20 miles distance. And it's these linear features that are incongruent in the landscape that catch your eye, towers, transmission line right-of-ways, long runways, long stretches of road. It's those inconsistent elements that take away from a natural viewshed. So I'm not sure if, for towers, if 3 miles is the right or five. I think it kind of depends on the viewpoint, the perspective, whether you're looking down or up. I mean, there's a lot of elements that go into evaluating these impacts.
Are you familiar with the trail that we were shown there, right outside the five-mile radius? Are you familiar with the terrain on that part of the trail?
Yes, sir. That's where I was standing when I talked to the pharmacist from Bangor.
So there's no trees blocking the view there. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
And so what are you, is the trail on a ridge or something? Or has it been clear cut? What's the story?
Yeah. I I think Saddleback is the third largest area of alpine vegetation in Maine. So it's Katahdin, Mount Abram, and then Saddleback. And it's not clear-cut. It's actually naturally low. In fact, we have some rare Krumholz environments along the edges. And so it's because of the high winds and severe winter characteristics that keep the trees from growing. So okay. It's an open ridgeline. That's what it is. But it's one of the longest ridgewalks. I think it might be the longest ridgewalk in Maine on the Appalachian Trail. So I don't know where I just leave that as maybe a comment.
Would you, in your view, this is a major visual impact?
You know, we've done a partial analysis, and I suspect probably not. There's some intervening topography between the viewpoint and where this tower is located. I think the tower will be seen behind that hill. But like I say, we haven't completed that analysis yet. It was more to make a comment of not to short shrift the Appalachian Trail when you're giving guidance to developers, that's all.
Fair enough.
And we, you know, we're not against development. I mean, as I mentioned, for the tower that's going up in Carrotunk, we work with the developer. So we would welcome, talking to the developer and, where they might direct their contractor to do their visual impact assessment.
Would you care to cross-examine the applicant?
You know, I just had actually one question that came out of what Todd was saying. And Todd, you mentioned that your tower is going to connect with equipment on Saddleback Mountain. Is there going to be additional communications equipment put on the mountain? I mean, we're familiar with the Breens installed a microwave repeater that provided communications and broadband down to their lodge. And that was maybe 10, 15 years ago. That's tucked in just over the north edge of the ridge. Is there going to be other equipment that's going to be connecting into your tower on Saddleback Mountain?
And if you're going to respond to that, please come up to the microphone. No, you can set. He can use the other one.
So right now, Wireless Partners is only doing a portion of the FirstNet AT&T build as elected by AT&T. It's my understanding that AT&T is going to be tasked with serving Saddleback Mountain. It was also my understanding that AT&T had some service there today, but I cannot speak on behalf of that. I can only tell you that our task was to build the tower in Rangeley. It was in a location provided by AT&T, and then AT&T's engineers approved that location as it's going to connect to their other towers in the area and the proposed towers that they're building for their first responders network that was approved by the state of Maine.
Well, maybe that's something we need to follow up on, because the repeater station, the microwave repeater, is within hundreds of feet of the Appalachian Trail. And we worked with Saddleback Mountain in the placement of that, so that as trail users, it was screened so that trail users wouldn't see it. So I think that's something, if someone could advise us as to who at AT&T we might want to connect up with, so that there isn't an impact at that site because of this other infrastructure that's going to be planned.
I would think they'd just go to the local zoning when it's time for them to do their applications. I think that's how that works.
Saddleback Mountain's you, right? Okay, keep us in mind.
In reference to the experience of the hiker on the Appalachian Trail and this visual impact thing, how much work has the Appalachian Mountain Trail Club done to reroute trails, say, from one side of a ridge to the other side of a ridge to minimize that visual impact? versus development. How much work have you done on trail relocation, dropping it, say, 100 feet in elevation instead of 100 feet further up in order to eliminate visual impact?
In the state of Maine, there hasn't been too much of that, but in other states, there has been where a trail, just as you said, would be put right over the lip of a ridge to perhaps shield it from kind of an urban development or something that's close to the trail. In the case of Saddleback, it was a controversial issue 20 years ago. And when that settlement came out, we did do some adjustments, I think, for this microwave tower, as I recall, or this repeater station. We're certainly working with the developer on the New England Clean Energy Connect project to minimize the amount of time that users would be viewing that project. So we are planning to physically relocate the trail in that case. Was one in response to a project coming through.
So, and is there any opportunity here as far as the so-called visual impact that you see happening here to be possibly relocate that trail so that you don't have any of that? I mean, I notice on your maps,
yeah,
you have vast areas and the trail happens to be right on the outer edge, and it looks like by the scale of the map, you might have 2 miles wide a piece of property here, and the trail's over here when it could be down in here and not have visual impact somewhere else that affects a project.
Yeah, it's up on the top of the ridge right now. Having gone over that edge to the south where we have that wider area, you'd almost need rappelling equipment. I mean, it is a very steep drop-off. And that sharp north edge is really the boundary with the ski area right there. And so that was worked out in this settlement 20 years ago. So the ski area comes right up to almost to the top of the mountain. And that was an accommodation made for having the trail being right there. That's why it looks so close to the edge.
Millen?
I'm getting confused between talking about Saddleback Mountain and this application. Bill, can you bring up the project overview, page 7, please? What he's going to bring up is the map that shows the 5 miles and the Appalachian Trail. And I just ask if the representative from the Appalachian Trail Club could show us where on the Appalachian Trail this bald ridge is that overlooks this site.
Sure. Am I going to have to get a microphone out? Turn it on? Maybe.
And you know what we do on our first pass is kind of a desktop exercise where we look at a viewshed analysis from that point that I'll point out on the map here in a minute. Okay, thanks. If you can see that. I believe this point here is the peak of Saddleback. And it's an open ridge that extends from perhaps back here. You go up to the top of the peak. You go along the trail to Saddleback Junior, and those are the two peaks that form the saddle of Saddleback Mountain. And so the viewpoint is looking out in this direction. And as I said, we're not expressing a strong concern here. We became interveners really to get some information and make sure that we were kind of doing our homework. I don't think this particular development is going to be an issue. But it was more seeing this 5 mile constraint, which I thought seemed odd that it would have been nice to take in that particular viewpoint.
Thank you. You have a question?
Well, so I guess, is what you're saying that if you had the information of what it visually looked like, had they included it in the analysis, then you could say, well, it does matter or doesn't.
Then we could say,
right?
Probably more definitively.
Yeah.
And it would be not so much a balloon test, although we've participated in balloon tests, like our tower in Keratunk, for instance. We worked with the developer on a balloon test there because it was very close. I mean, that tower is just adjacent, within hundreds of feet of the trail. In this case, it would be more of a reverse ray path kind of analysis or a viewshed mapping that if their consultant had done that, that would have been fine by us.
Thank you. Bill, how many public comments do we have?
Before we move on, does the applicant have any questions of the interveners?
I thought they'd exhausted it, but maybe not. Does the applicant have questions for the interveners? Thank you.
So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people who've signed up to speak. Did anybody come in since we pulled this list that wants to speak? Okay, we'll have you sign up afterwards, but thanks. Okay. So we have 6 people. Okay. I can call them if you'd like, Everett.
Would you do that?
Sure.
I think that, 4 minutes, each one of you. So we're going to call your name one at a time, and if you would come up, and I guess you're going to sit at this microphone over here on your left and speak into the microphone, please. Say your name and where you're from, and if you're representing anyone other than yourself, and then give your testimony.
Okay, first we have Randy Belanger.
All right, yeah, my name's Randy Blanger, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I apologize for the outburst earlier. My house is literally 400 feet from this tower. This actually is going to be my new roommate. It's not going to be as insignificant as these individuals are trying to portray. The wooded area isn't this deep forest that they're trying to portray. In fact, Mark Beauregard has applied to clear right up to my property line. So it's all new growth in the area. The highest trees are probably about 40 feet. This is going to be seen from my master bedroom. It's going to be seen from my front deck. It's going to be seen from my guest room. I'm going to be living with this tower once it's built, if it's built, and hopefully it's not. You know, it's going to devalue my property. Even if I wanted to try to sell it, I would not be able to sell it. The way that they have those graphics are completely misleading. The forest that's in between that tower and that's going to be in my house is new growth. It's not old growth. It's not 7,500, 150-foot trees. This tower is going to be 150 feet above the trees that I can see. And that's all I'm going to see every day, getting in my truck, going to bed at night, and my guests staying in my house. I really don't know what else to say. I know I'm insignificant. They just stated that because my view doesn't matter. I'm not part of the Appalachian Trail. When they did the balloon test, they really didn't put out any correspondence in regards to that balloon test. And it just seems like they've been going under the cover of night to get this passed through and pushed through without anybody on Dallas Plantation noticing. In fact, most of Dallas Plantation doesn't even know this is going on. Rangeley has hundreds of hilltops. Thousands of hilltops. That's why they call it Rangeley. They're trying to state that this isn't Irvine, California. I'm sorry. You know, there are residential areas in Rangeley, but not to the extent where we have tens, hundreds of thousands of people in one area. If I owned a house in Orange County, California, and they were proposing this, I'd probably step back because, you know, it is what it is. There's no other choice because of the population. But I'm going to be having to live with this radiation-creating tower, 24/7, and my neighbors. So they try to play it off as insignificant. It's quite significant. It's significant to me. It's significant to my neighbors. And this is my only appeal, you know, to try to save the valuation of my property and my health and my future, hopefully in Dallas Plantation. So that's really all I have to say. And I appreciate the opportunity. And I'm not going to take up any more of your time.
Thank you. Question.
Go ahead.
Question.
So how far from your property line is your house?
My house isn't that far from my property line. My house is literally probably about 75 feet from my property line. So if they're 350 feet from my property line, then they're less than 500 feet from my doorstep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next we have David Laurie.
Thank you. I'm an attorney. I'm here for a bunch of neighbors, including Mr. Belanger. I'm going to try not to duplicate anything that they say. I'm going to deal with the evidence and the standards you're supposed to apply to this application, which it was already noted is in the Community Residential Development Subdistrict. And the purposes of that district require a finding that this use is compatible with the residential uses there, because the district was established by you to promote those residential uses. It's been characterized as a utility. And it is to some extent, although it's certainly not a public utility, it's a private utility. It's more in the nature of a commercial development, but doesn't really matter under your standards how you choose to characterize it. The question is it compatible with, and does it enhance this neighborhood, or does it significantly detract from it by being incompatible with it? And the people who live there, who hired me to come here, don't want the service which is being provided, which is usually what you're about when you talk about utilities. Now, the people who will enjoy this are elsewhere. The balloon test that we spent so much time on a little while ago is really for view sheds. That's the way it was conducted. That was a five-mile test that they did. It was not put up to test its compatibility, the compatibility of this tower with the existing neighborhood. The existing neighborhood was not notified of the balloon test. They were not present. They did not observe the balloon from their properties and from their homes. Some of them, like Mr. Belanger, don't need a balloon test to know how it's going to impact them, but an awful lot more of them would know about that impact had they been notified and had the balloon test been conducted for the area impact and compatibility, which is the standard that you're really looking at. And I don't mean to make light of the Appalachian Trail or anything, or Saddleback or whatever else. This is my first time here, so I'm not quite sure what is important to the commission, but the statute, I'm sorry, I'm a municipal lawyer, so I may slip into ordinances and stuff. The fact is that what you have to determine here is whether this utility or commercial use or whatever it is compatible with this neighborhood, with this subdistrict that you already established and gave protection to under the law. And that's what we need to focus on and stay focused on as we look at this, as you look at this. The quality of evidence which has been submitted by Rising Tide is not good. I think I made that clear in some of my emails, where I asked specifically that they do something to make their photographs and maps relevant to this issue. And their maps and photographs should have overlays on them showing where the boundary lines are, the property lines, and where the residence, existing residences are located. Then they would be meaningful if they had a scale on them as well, I should say, so that you could sit down and calculate distances. As it is, they're just photographs and maps of the area, which are meaningless in terms of assessing impact. They have, the applicant has a burden of proof, a burden of bringing forward evidence to demonstrate what the impact on the area is going to be. And they didn't meet that burden. Instead, they've just made assertions like this will have no negative impact on the area. But there's no proof of that assertion. And there should really be evidence in the record. And it was a burden of the applicant to put that in there. The balloon tests would have been helpful as well if they marked that on those, if those were also overlaid where the sightings were made from. Now, we know the sightings are made from way far away because they're made for a different purpose, to deal with the view shed for the public. The balloon test is irrelevant to what you need to look at in terms of the impact on this particular area and compatibility of the proposal of this area. There are a few other points I wanted to make. I don't know if I have enough time. I will try to do them quickly. Because this is an important case for you, because as I understand it, this is precedential. This is the first time you're dealing with this situation, and it's going to come up again. We all know it will, and probably soon. But it's, so that's one of the reasons why it's really important that you make the applicant meet its burden of proof of showing that, in fact, the standard of, and what is it here? Promoting residential living and thriving neighborhoods. Whether that standard is being met in the compatibility with existing residential uses. So it's very important that you focus on that when you look at all this. You heard from Mr. Belanger, you'll hear from others as to the impact it's going to have on them. And I urge you to be careful and to not allow something which they're going to regret to happen to their neighborhood. I was concerned about soils as well, because I did not see, and maybe it's there, the Class A soils study for disturbed areas that's required under your rules. But certainly the staff asked them for more soils work, and they were told that this information would be given to you, would be filed with you after you approve the permit and after the whole thing, or prior to the whole thing is built, but after you approve the permit. That's kind of, in administrative law, that's kind of like the Alice in Wonderland, where they had the trial, where they had the verdict first and the trial afterwards. And you have to have the evidence in the record to support the application at this stage, not after the fact. And it's important that they submit information that's specifically requested by staff before you're faced with the obligation of deciding whether they've met their burden of proof or not. And that's true of the safety of the tower. It's true of everything else about this project. They haven't brought forward enough evidence. You need to say no, because it was their burden to bring forward evidence to show that it would be compatible. It's not the burden of the opponents to show that it would not be. And that's what needs to be done. I'm sorry, does anybody have any question for me before I let them tell you about their impact?
Go ahead.
So can you tell me what the factors are that you think are the most important in making a determination about compatibility with residential use for a utility facility?
I think some of them have been indicated by the testimony you heard from Mr. Belanger, and you're going to hear it from other neighbors as well. I think it has to not substantially diminish the value and utility of existing residential property. And they could put it someplace else, presumably. And there was a very big circle there showing where AT&T would like to have coverage. And they should find a spot where it doesn't, you know, if he has some land in the general management district, that's where it should go, rather than impacting on this residential area, which is protected by the ordinance, by your prior rulings, I should say. So I think the burden was on them to show, among other things, that there's nowhere else they could put it where, you know, no other area where they could put it, but and still achieve what they need to achieve in terms of the range. I have a cell phone. It turns out that most people who live there, at least most of my clients, also have cell phones, but they don't mind not having coverage there in their homes. And other people may want it, and AT&T can find some other place to put a tower, I'm sure, within that area. I didn't hear any testimony saying this is the only place where AT&T would accept coverage, that they would provide sufficient coverage for AT&T. I didn't hear that from them. And the impact of this on the area is, well, you'll have to decide that after you hear the testimony from the neighbors. But it's significant enough that you need to consider whether it's compatible or not. And they had the burden of proof of showing that it would be compatible and didn't meet it. Because, as I said, none of their submissions are to scale. None of their submissions have boundary lines or existing residences or balloon test areas. Of course, they didn't do the balloon test in that area. But they're not identified on their plan, on any of their plans or on their photographs. And it would have been relatively easy to transpose that on there and to give you the scale of the photographs and the scale of the maps. And they didn't do that. So I'm saying that if I were sitting in your place, I would decide it based upon the failure of the applicant to demonstrate, to meet their burden of proof. However, I think that after you hear the testimony from the witnesses, you might go further and say that, in fact, you might be able to conclude at that point, when you hear the evidence on the other side, you might well be able to conclude that it would not be compatible. So I said, I would, if I were writing your decision, I would say they haven't met their burden of proof, but.
Anyone else? Thank you.
You're welcome.
We actually have only five total because one of the people signed up was for the applicant, so I didn't notice that, so we have a few minutes back. The next person is Ralph Hutchinson.
Hello, my name is Ralph Hutchinson. I'm a property owner, and my property abuts the proposed tower location. I've owned property up there for 40 years and enjoyed the spectacular views and the wonderful area. So, of course, I'm dismayed that my property values are going to plummet because of this structure, and I'm worried about the hazards that may happen through the neighborhood. I'm not a selfish person. I know the citizens of Rangeley need good cell service. It's hard enough to make a living in the Western Mountains without being connected. I don't question the need for good communication services, but I do question the placement of this tower. It is a well-researched fact that a visible utility structure does impact property values. Research by the National Association of Realtors indicates that over 90% of buyers and renters are less interested in properties near cell towers and would pay less for property in close vicinity to a cellular antenna. I do not want to sustain a loss because this tower is built next to my property. It seems unfair that someone who doesn't live on Dallas Hill can profit from this cell tower while all his neighbors suffer a substantial loss on the values of their property. I'm also concerned about safety issues, having one of these towers in a residential neighborhood. I would like to mention that the adverse health impacts associated with the overexposure of RF radiation emanating from these cell towers is a problem. The Telecommunication Act of 1996, which fast-tracked cell tower sightings, is now 23 years old. The study that claims no health effects from cell towers and their effect on health were done before 2006 and before the release of the iPhone in 2007. The data use of these towers has increased significantly, as has the RF radiation surrounding these towers. Cisco Systems states that mobile data traffic in the United States was 687 times greater in 2017 than it was in 2007. This represents 680 times more data traffic and RF activity than when most quoted studies were conducted. The science of health impact on these towers is incomplete. These potential hazards should not be placed in a residentially zoned community, and you have the opportunity to see that this doesn't happen. The site of this tower is extremely visible from Rangeley Lake and other spots all around the community. We have been assured by the report of rising tide that the visibility tests conducted with a small weather balloon showed that it wasn't a problem. Unfortunately, we were not notified to witness this test, nor were any other landowners. And the fact that the company is asking for permission to add five other carriers seems like the size and footprint of this tower will grow substantially. Rangeley is a place of great beauty and heavily dependent on tourism. There are probably a dozen other places this tower could be built that would not abut a neighborhood and still provide great communication. This site on Dallas Hill might be easy and convenient for the rising tide, but is not the best place for the area of Rangeley. This tower should be placed where it will have the least visual impact, not the most. A 190-foot tower does not belong in an area zoned residentially, community residential subdivision. While it is inevitable that new towers will be constructed, it is important that LIRC and the property owners it represents maintain control over size, location, scope, expansion, and character of these installations. The location of this 190-foot tower should not be decided by the cell phone industry, but by the people who live and work in the area and this land use commission. We have the opportunity to be thoughtful about the placement of these cell towers in the areas of Maine under the jurisdiction of LIRC. I believe your commission should be proactive about the cell tower placement, especially in areas zoned community residential. I fear acceptance of this tower will set a dangerous precedent for the future. You have the opportunity to guide the placement of these towers away from neighborhoods while protecting the property values and health of Maine citizens, as well as the beauty of an area as special as Rangeley. Thank you. I have a copy of this I'd like to submit.
Yes, please do. Submit it.
Yep.
Anyone have any questions? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Henry Yankowski, and I'm a Dallas Hill property owner. And being near the end of the line, everybody's already said everything I was going to say. A couple of things. It will impact me visually. No one ever asked me about it to start with. Couple things. It's like putting a 19-story building in a neighborhood of one- and two-story stick-built homes, which seems totally ridiculous. Another thing, being an electrician, I know a lot of times, being from a big city, these towers, the power supplies emit what I would call a 60-cycle hum. They buzz. You can hear them. And up on Dallas Hill, where it's really quiet and people like to open their windows, I think they're going to hear that. So I think there's going to be an audible problem eventually, too. So, but I think it's inappropriate. And I noticed that earlier you guys were talking about that in this particular kind of district, you've never allowed this type of a project. And I think there's a reason for that. It seems inappropriate. So that's all I have to say. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you. The real issue is we've never had a project proposed in this type of district. This is a first. So it wasn't that we've denied any. We just never have been asked to have one placed there. And so that's a different slant on it. Anybody else have any issues? If not, I will read a closing statement.
We have one more, Everett.
We have one more?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, I thought he was the last. Go ahead.
One more. Paul and Mary Dobek.
Oh, you're on there. You just didn't check that you wanted to speak. So I'll add you. Okay, thanks.
Were you here when I gave the swearing in?
No.
All right. Go ahead.
Thank you for holding this hearing. My name is Paul Dobek, and I'm here to voice my concern to the proposed cell tower on Dallas Hill. What I'm about to say is pretty redundant from what everybody else is saying, but I'd like it on record. My wife Mary and I purchased a home on Dallas Hill Road in January of this year. We currently reside in Massachusetts. We've been visiting the Rangeley-Dallas area for several years and look to retire here. We were attracted to the open space, the natural beauty, and the many outdoor opportunities that the area held. It was also refreshing to be in a place that was not cluttered with box stores, fast food restaurants, solar farms, wind turbines, and cell towers. Excuse me. We were disheartened to learn that a cell tower is being proposed on a street that has, in our opinion, some of the most spectacular views in New England. We were also disappointed that we did not receive any correspondence in regards to this project and only learned of it through social media. It's my understanding that only residents within a certain distance of the tower, by law, were mailed letters. However, Dallas Plantation is not a largely populated area, and therefore we feel that this affects everyone living here, and as such, all residents should be receiving letters. I must make it clear that we are not against technology, but rather the location of that technology. Our biggest issues are the effects on the health and well-being of residents, property value, and the possible negative impacts on the environment. While cellular companies laud the benefits of improved coverage, faster data, and better services as a result of installing this technology, which so many people have become dependent on, we feel they do not put as much focus on the negative effects to humans, animals, and the environment in general that surround these towers. It is our understanding, in speaking with several realtors, that in a time where cancer is on the rise and people are more aware of the dangers of electromagnetic signals, consumers are reluctant to purchase a home near a cell tower or even a power line. We also feel that there are other possible issues with cell towers, such as when the technology advances, will that mean more or stronger RF signals? What happens if the tower becomes obsolete? Decommissioning is mentioned, but what does that entail? Will it be removed, and will the environment around the tower be restored? Will residents have to endure having a useless metal structure near their homes? It should be noted that my wife and I have no personal allegiances to anyone involved in this matter. We have not been up here long enough to know our neighbors, and we do not know the person who owns the property that this tower might be built on. We are against this because we are concerned about our property value as well as that of our neighbors, the possible health effects associated with this tower, the possibility of another tower being placed in the area, as well as how this affects the natural resources of the area. In our opinion, aside from the negative property, health, and environmental impacts, placing this tower in a residential area of Dallas Plantation is akin to planting a dead tree in the middle of a rose garden. Does not fit with the natural beauty of Dallas Plantation. With the thousands of acres in this area, surely there's a better place to erect a cell tower that can meet our technology needs without hurting people, personal property, and the natural resources of the Western Mountains. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And if you'd like, you can submit that.
Yes.
So, ma'am, do you intend to testify? Please stand and raise your right hand. Do you affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the whole truth and nothing but the truth? Thank you.
The
Matt, you can't pass around your phone.
Oh, you can't look at the picture?
Do you have a different... Is there a way that you can submit the picture to staff so that staff can provide to the commission,
sure,
and to make sure that the... Because the applicant and the other interveners, everybody needs to see what you have.
Anyway, my front yard is a five acre...
Please sit and talk into the microphone.
My front yard is a five-acre field that abuts the large Saddleback land holding. I am at 53 Lyle Road. When the picture comes up, it's the skinny red one that I need, not that one. So the first thing is that I was contacted 2 years ago. And when they contacted me about putting the tower on my property...
Will you just say your name for the record?
My name is Donna Christine Coleman. I'm at 53 Lyle Road, Rangeley. I'm on Dallas Hill. And I abut Randy Ballinger and Mr. Hutchinson, who you just heard. My property... Yeah, that was the one. No, the last one. Yep, that one there. May I approach the map?
You need to stand by the mic. No, you can't testify now. There's a pointer there you can use, but we need to record this conversation.
So I am on Lyle Road, and my property is a large tract which basically has this beautiful field with a view of the town of Rangeley and four of the lakes. On a clear day, I can see 400 miles to Mount Washington from my point. I have been busy, thank you, Sarah. I have been busy working with the Rangeley Heritage Trust to donate my land for an overlook for the town of Rangeley. The Dallas Hill Plantation area has an ATV and snowmobile trail very close to where this tower is proposed. If there was a downing of the trail, it could definitely impact somebody on that trail. I also have to say that I get a sunset every single day. From where that tower will be, the way that the sun sets, that tower will be lit up and visible from the town of Rangeley every single day that there is a bright sun, which is quite a lot of days. So that is something that the entire town is going to see. My overlook is something that the town sees from Route 4 when they come down the hill. They see my house and my field. This tower is right behind me. They will see the tower when they come to the town of Rangeley for their vacations. My husband has been an Appalachian Trail maintenance maintainer. I have called him for decades out on the trail and have had no trouble with cell service to Saddleback Mountain from Dallas Hill. Perhaps AT&T also wants service, but there is Verizon service and other people with cell phones on the trail when you're hiking. If your cell service doesn't work, you just borrow somebody else's if it's an emergency. That's kind of how it is on the trail. I just wanted to testify as a hiker how it works. The term that I heard this evening about the tower being fully loaded in a residential area completely terrified me. What is the impact going to be on that little girl there with the red hair years down the line because she's been fully loaded? So I'm asking and I'm begging, please don't let this be put in a residential area, and don't let it be something that people that come to the town of Rangeley see first. I want them to come to a park, sit at picnic tables, enjoy the birds, watch the eagles swoop down and grab mice, and do all the things that children do there. The ATV trail and the snowmobile trail is right there. So that's all I have to say. As a mother, I'm asking if you would all maybe reconsider if you have been considering it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that's all I have on the list here. Is anybody else in the audience?
Mark, you've already spoken. Yeah. I believe that concludes the public testimony. He's also had his bite of the apple. I'm concluding the hearing. The hearing record will remain open until July 22, 2019 at 5 p.m. to allow public and the parties to file written statements with the commission, and until July 29, 2019 at 5 p.m. to file statements in rebuttal of these filed by the July 22 deadline. So if you have additional issues that you'd like to address, you have until July 22 at 5 p.m. to submit your written comments. To view or obtain a copy of the permit application, please see additional information provided on the hearing notice. Copies of the notice are available on the sign-in table. Comments during this period should be sent via email or postal mail to Mr. Hinkle as directed in the hearing notice. So if you haven't gotten a copy of the hearing notice, it's probably a good idea to pick one up. This hereby concludes the public hearing of the Land Use Planning Commission on Rising Tide Towers application for a proposed telecommunications tower. Thank you for coming, people.